We're talking about superhero movies and the reasons we flock to the theater to see them. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. After 11 years, 21 films, we've accumulated dozens of characters in the ever-sprawling Marvel Cinematic Universe. More than 100 million people went to see the Marvel superhero epic Avengers Endgame during the film's worldwide opening and left all box office records far behind. A word to the wise, this is a no-spoiler zone, and if you've seen it, you can tell us about the experience, but be warned, if you reveal something important about Endgame, we will stop you in your tracks. We'll find you. So, who is your favorite superhero? What is it about their powers or their personality that sets them apart from the rest? And what do you like about the Marvel movies? Is it the storylines? Perhaps it's the high-tech special effects. Tell us what you think. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Chris Yogerst is an assistant professor of communication in the Department of Arts and Humanities at the UW-Milwaukee. Chris, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So we were very clear at the outset here. No spoilers during this conversation. You plan to adhere to this, true?
Yes, no yes? Spoiler alerts.
All
I
right.
Actually waiting until next weekend to see Endgame.
All right, I need some blood here, like sign in blood. So, you know, Americans spent $350 million on Avengers Endgame over the weekend, more than $1 billion across the globe. Without having seen it, what about this film is generating all these crowds?
That's a really good question, and a lot of people are asking that. I think it's really – we have, like you said, 11 years worth of movies that are building up to it. And if you think about it, it's bigger than just this one movie. I mean, you think of any time – you can compare it to like maybe a series finale at a TV show, right? You know, if you think of like the series finale of Seinfeld or Friends or these shows that go on for like a decade – here you have movies that have went on for a decade, but you also have generations of people that have followed these characters in the comics. So it's bigger than the movies. It's bigger than this 10 years, 11 years. And this movie is just a culminating event of a magnitude I'm not sure if we've seen.
Well, and these superhero friends, they just keep growing. The crowd gets bigger. It's like I can't imagine, you know, you got Thor and Iron Man, Captain America, Black Panther, the Hulk, Black Widow. How do we relate to all these characters? How do we even keep them all straight?
Keeping them all straight is difficult because I was telling you before, I teach a course on superheroes and mythology with a colleague of mine on campus, Mark Peterson, who's a philosopher. And we're always daunted by how many characters there are and how many versions of each character there are. So it's like I'm really into Batman and he's really into a bunch of other characters. And every semester we're learning from students who found a new story arc that tells us something about the character. What's great about these movies that Endgame is capping off is that it's everyone's kind of on the same page. Everyone has followed these. You have all these movies that connect but somehow – most of them still stand alone as really fun mm-hmm. movies as well. We just taught Captain America the first film, and they just work. So they work at a multitude of levels as standalone films and as a franchise that really, really gets people excited.
Yeah, they have that secret sauce of you don't have to be invested for over a decade, that you can pick it up at any point.
Yeah, for sure.
And that certainly helps at the box office. Let's go to Mackenzie in Whitewater. Mackenzie, hi.
Hi. This is like the best topic ever. So
it is.
So starting back, geez, well, I'm remembering, you know, the series really started picking up, you know, when they started doing the Thor and the Guardians of the Galaxy and they redid Spider-Man. But like way back when like Iron Man first came out, which was I think like mid 2000s.
2008, I think.
It was 2000 what?
I think it was 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So I was like 18 then, and I was obsessed from that first movie, and we still had that, before that, we had the Spider-Man played by Tobey Maguire, too. So there was still all of that, and I was just following Spider-Man, Iron Man, each one that came out. It was just, each one was just better than the next. I just loved it. And when they started coming out with Captain America and tying it all together, it was just so, it was exciting. It was just the most exciting thing, and it was like awesome. I just loved it, and it was something that we could all look forward to. And I have a family, so it was something that we could all join in on, and it's really special. It's brought some pretty great moments.
Oh, Mackenzie, so you kind of seen this as a progression. It's really built the characters growing. You're growing kind of with the storylines.
The Hulk movies, the Thor movies, Guardians of the Galaxy, all my kids have watched it. And then one day it was just like, they have a movie together. It was awesome.
Well, yeah. Thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. You know, this is fantasy, though. What makes superhero movies so irresistible, so relatable?
That's one of the things we talk about a lot in class, is that there's something that there's a long argument against superhero narratives, that they're just wish fulfillment or it's just kids stuff. But there's something much deeper than all of that that makes it transcend age, makes it transcend generations. And it's what you said, is there's a relatable element. There's something about all of these characters. And when, for example, when Superman was first written, he was this perfect character. You couldn't beat him. But as these characters evolved, they got villains that could defeat them, could kill them, that made it interesting, that made it you didn't know what was going to happen. It wasn't guaranteed win. And also you have characters that are – they have major character flaws. So they're inhuman, or they're super in certain ways, but they're also very, very human in other ways that we can relate to them. Mackenzie mentioned Spider-Man. Spider-Man is really – he's young. He's insecure. And, you know, even as adults, we can look back and remember being young and insecure at certain points. So even though these characters have these amazing abilities and they can topple these massive villains, they still have things we can connect to.
And they can also be funny and human in a way. You know, Marvel has had a little bit more of a lighter tone. There's some really dark things in DC Comics. Have the two gone in a little bit different directions, or do you see some parallels?
I mean, there's definitely parallels, but I think that both have branded themselves in interesting ways. I mean, it's kind of unfortunate because Marvel has done a lot better with their films, undoubtedly. But as a tried and true Batman fan, I love the DC stuff. It's definitely darker. It's definitely edgier. But it's nice to have two brands of superhero companies, in a sense that – and of course, there's much more beyond that. But it's nice to have the humor. And even when you look at the Marvel films, the humor, it's not the same with all of them. It's one thing for Iron Man, and it's a whole other thing for Guardians of the Galaxy and what James Gunn has done with that franchise. So even with the humor, there's a type of brand of it for anybody coming to these movies.
We are talking with Chris Yogerst. He is our guide. He teaches film at the UW-Milwaukee, and you can join in with your comments, your questions about superheroes at 800-642-1234. How have superhero movies affected your life, your family? Have they taught you something about the world or made you consider a situation from a different perspective? When did you first become a fan? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We have someone here who made has an email, an example of the obsession. One of our morning producers, Courtney, is a friend from Illinois who recently saw the movie. His wife was very much pregnant at the time. They agreed it was okay that he attend the 3-hour movie, but he spoke with the box office to make sure that they find him if his wife called, just in case she went into labor. And sure enough, she did give birth just a few days later. So, you know, this is 3-hour movie. This is giving several hours of your life to this.
Yeah, it's incredible how long. But I mean, the previous film, Infinity War, was also nearly 3 hours. I think it was 2 hours and 45 or something like that. I mean, it's a lot of time. But they also have 10 years of movies to wrap up. So it's almost impressive that they can do it effectively 2 movies at 6 hours total. Mm. But even for people that haven't seen all of the films, like, I mean, my wife hasn't seen all of the films. So we watched Infinity War last year, and now she's excited to go back and visit some of them, and some of the characters she doesn't know as much about. So there seems to be – I think that adds to the staying power. Even newer fans that have caught the last bit of the franchise can now go back to the beginning and watch all the origin stories.
Well, explain how, like, the Easter egg thing works. Like, what is up with this Easter egg thing?
That's interesting. I mean, and that's something that goes way back in film history. I mean, Alfred Hitchcock did it with his cameos in all of his films. And now with the Marvel films, we got Stan Lee doing it, which has been great. And I'm sure most people teared up at the thank you, Stan, and Captain Marvel, which was sweet. But I think I guess that's another layer of, I guess, something to connect to. It gives us something to look for in subsequent viewings, things we can notice that we didn't know before, or when we learn new character arcs or we learn the history of certain technologies, we can find little pieces of it in there. And I think it's just something else to search for.
So they drop little things in the movie that could impact the future, or, you know, what is that concept really?
Well, for sure. I mean, it's some of it is actually when it's done at its best, it's really good writing. And
okay.
One of the things that just pops in my mind right now, one of my favorite Marvel characters is actually Peggy Carter. And when they had the Agent Carter show, they had one of the characters was Jarvis. And then when you watch, which was Howard Stark's assistant, when you watch Iron Man, you realize that Tony Stark named one of his technologies after Jarvis. So it's little things like this. You can start making connections between them, and it adds another layer of depth that you might not have expected.
And it's also a conversation starter with someone who may be
yep.
next to you or your friend saying, hey, did you notice this?
Exactly. Exactly.
So it does kind of build a community. Do you feel there is community around superhero films?
Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. A few years ago, I presented at a panel at Comic-Con in San Diego. It was the first time I was at that event. And it's amazing the community that's around these characters in pop culture in general, but definitely with superheroes, and as well as how accessible the community is.
Mm.
You know, it's not something that's real standoffish. You know, there's no snobbery with it. It's, you know, if someone wants to get interest in superheroes and they go to Comic-Con, they will have no problem finding conversation.
Marvel started laying the groundwork for Endgame more than a decade ago, as McKinsey told us, beginning with that first Iron Man movie in 2008. We're talking about this Marvel Cinematic Universe journey that we're on, looking at why it is so appealing to have our superheroes amongst us. We're at 800-642-1234. Chris Yogerst is our guide. He teaches film at the UW Milwaukee. Back to this conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Avengers Endgame has been seen in theaters by more people more rapidly than any film in history. And we're talking about what draws us to superheroes, why they smash box office records. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Where do our pop culture crushes on Iron Man, Captain Marvel, and their super friends come from? And lest we forget the supervillain, Thanos.
Dread it. Run from it. Destiny arrives all the same. And now it's here. Or should I say, I am.
Listen to that voice. When did you first become a fan? How old were you? Did you start out with movies or comic books? And who first told you about these larger-than-life characters? We're at 800-642-1234, and Chris Yogerst is our guide. He teaches film at the UW Milwaukee. Let's go back to the phones now with Nick joining us from Madison. Hi, Nick. Hey, Nick. Are you there? I don't think we have Nick. Let's try Grace in Platteville. Grace, hi. Nope. I'm sorry. We don't have Grace or Nick. So, these are famous characters, Chris. How do writing and directing influence these storylines?
That's a good question. And that's one of the things I think that also helps drive the interest in these movies, because each one of the films has a different flavor to it. You have all these directors that are taking different stances to the characters. And when you compare Marvel and DC before, you have look at what James Gunn has been doing with the Guardians of the Galaxy, and you look at what Christopher Nolan does with The Dark Knight, and even, you know, going with DC, even what Patty Jenkins did with Wonder Woman. These are all very different movies, and there might be somebody who loves all of them, or maybe just one of them, and they all have something really to be found that brings the character to life in a really awesome way.
And you're a philosophy professor. You've teamed up to teach a class on superheroes and mythology. How obvious is a connection here?
I'm actually a communication professor.
My
colleague
right.
is a philosophy professor, so he's really the expert on that. But the mythology lines up quite well. What we do to organize that is we look at Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, which influenced George Lucas. It's how he structured Star Wars. But the hero's journey tracks with pretty much all the superheroes. There's a call to adventure. There's a lot of times a refusal of a call. There's mentors. There's thresholds, trials. There's a reward. There's a return back to their ordinary life. All of this stuff tracks through mythology, and superheroes are just modern mythology.
Let's try Nick again in Madison. Nick, are you there?
I am here.
Awesome.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. One thing that that I'm not going to say disturbs me, because I love the movies and I love the storylines of where they went. But you got characters that I've been following since I was a child. Like the Hulk or like Thor, which is two of my favorite characters. Now, within these movies, they have turned these two characters, they really took the basis of the characters out of the movies, in these last two movies. I don't understand that. Like the Hulk.
Oh, dear. And Nick just dropped at the most dramatic point there. Chris, can you pick it up there for him?
Nick has a good point that, this goes back to there are so many storylines with all of these characters, and you've got to just pick bits and pieces of them to fit into the movies. But that gives us something to learn from the comic books. You can only fit so much into a 2-hour movie, and you could do on one level a lot more with a graphic novel. So if you want to learn more about one of the characters, go to the source material.
So how do the high-profile celebrities factor into these superhero films?
It's interesting. They particularly with this franchise, I feel like they've really taken ownership of their characters in a really cool way. You listen to Robert Downey Jr. talk about Tony Stark, and in a lot of ways, I think he just is Tony Stark. I think he's just playing himself, but he does it brilliantly. And these characters own these roles. You think of Captain America and Black Widow and everybody. You couldn't picture anybody else playing these roles. We mentioned Hulk before. A perfect Hulk with the Wisconsin native playing the title role.
Mark Ruffalo.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Kenosha in the house.
Exactly. I think they take ownership of these roles. I think that's what really makes it so big and so interesting to continue following it.
Is Stan Lee's impact going to be seen well into the future, and what he has done to comics and where we're headed with these epic films?
Yes, I think so. He was very hands-on. He's very much – his history, anyone who wants to learn more about Stan Lee, read all the books about him, because his journey is so fascinating, and he – really played a pivotal role in not only bringing comics out of almost destruction in the 1950s, which is a whole lot of interesting history there, but he was a cheerleader for this industry for so long when it was on the ropes, and helped bring it into not only prominence as a comic print medium, but also ushering it into Hollywood as a big budget film medium. And this is something he had been working on since like the 80s, maybe earlier than that. Mm-hmm. And it's really come to fruition. And I'm glad he was alive to see what it became.
Let's go to Lance in Antioch, Illinois. Hi, Lance.
Hello. Yeah, one of the things I wanted to say was that one of the things that made Marvel so successful, at least in this last run since Iron Man, this long 22 film arc, is that they were staying true to the comic characters. So many of the previous films that they did, like Daredevil, didn't really stay true to the characters and weren't as successful. Once Marvel has taken over many of these projects, they were casting well and staying true to what comic book fans also wanted, where they were keeping that loyalty of comic book fans.
Lance, thanks. Chris, do you agree they kept tight with the comic books?
I think they did. Daredevil's a great example where you have the movies with the one movie with Ben Affleck that was what it was. But then you have Netflix and Marvel doing the Daredevil TV series, which is much closer to the Frank Miller graphic novels and is really exciting and explores a lot of depth of character. The Matt Murdock story is one of my favorites, so I'm glad he mentioned that. And it's not that there's necessarily anything wrong with deviating from the comics, because film is a different medium. We run into this all the time. Is the book better? Is the movie better? Sometimes it's nice to have differences, because then you can go to the other medium and learn something new. But I think that for some characters, they were written so well already, so we don't need to change it.
you know, these characters, they, because you grow, they grow more and more. It's almost as if you have this whole community of characters who are all doing different things, but also in the end trying to work together to solve these problems that in a weird way we can relate to, problems that are real to our world. How do these films walk the line with reality?
This is a good question, because my favorite films are always the ones that deal with reality a little bit more directly. So you can look at movies like Thor, and it's, you know, there's other planets and stuff involved, but a whole lot of the Avengers movies are, I mean, you look at the first Iron Man film or the first Captain America film, and they're dealing with things that are very real history in our world. And that allows us to connect to these larger than life characters and see them in very real world situations. And you look at, I mean, something, one of my favorites, The Dark Knight. I mean, you have this amazing villain in the Joker played by Heath Ledger. But in 2008, this movie sparked all kinds of discussions about the parallels between the war on terror and all this. So you have a superhero movie provoking discussions about very real life issues.
So you're headed to the theater this weekend, I understand.
I am.
What are you most looking forward to?
I am just, I can't imagine how they are going to sum all this up. And everybody I've talked to says they do it brilliantly. So I'm trying not to have too high of expectations, just because that happens when you're a moviegoer.
Oh, you have high expectations.
I do. But I think they can be met. And everyone I've talked to has said major high praises for this movie. So I'm just excited to see it all come to a close, but also excited to plow through all the movies again.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Chris Yogerst is an assistant professor of communication in the Department of Arts and Humanities at the UW-Milwaukee. Just ahead, we round up national politics as 2020 presidential hopefuls and the sitting president himself make their way to Wisconsin. News and analysis is coming up next. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.